You don't have to be a machine learning engineer to help make the future a smarter place. Become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
Eric, happy 2022. I have a new year's resolution, which is to make more money than last year. And I would like some investing advice. And I'm hoping that you and your team of analysts at Bloomberg Intelligence can help me out. Is that kosher? Can we do that?
Yeah. I mean, I actually thought your resolution was going to be to clean your closet.
For those not in the know, I've been recording in my closet for many, many, many episodes of Trillions. It's actually my wife's closet. But yeah, here we are.
To answer your question, though, yes. So every year we write all these outlooks and it's all very, you know, sell side research-ish. But one thing we do that's a little BuzzFeed-ish is a listicle, 22 ETFs for 2022. And sometimes we do retail conferences, and the do-it-yourself retail investors, they don't really care that much about like how much is going from advisors to brokers and some of that like more trendy stuff. They want tickers. They want to learn ETFs through tickers. They want genuine ideas of interesting new innovative products and whatnot. So we did this because of that. And we don't necessarily say these are ETFs that are going to go up or down. We don't make any advice. But these are ETFs that we just can't get off our mind. They're ones that have really just stuck into our brain, and we feel like tap into bigger themes that we're watching as well. And so we do it every year. And so we have, Athanasios, James, and Rebecca on our team, who all contributed some of the ETFs of the 22.
So joining us on this episode of Trillions, James Seifert, Athanasios Serafagas, and Rebecca Sin from Hong Kong, who we're going to patch in so that she can contribute despite being in a different time zone from the rest of us recording. And we're going to hear about some investing ideas for the next year. And don't take this as investment advice. They're just ideas that hopefully get you it.
The way we're phrasing it, Joel, is ETFs to watch.
Okay, ETFs to watch. There you go.
Yeah, I got the compliance sign off.
Compliance, check that box. Okay, thanks for that. I also want to confess that we had some technical difficulties with my mic, so what follows may sound a little differently than I usually sound. Sorry about that. This time on Trillions, 22 ETFs for 2022. Athanasios, I'm going to call you by your non-Greek name from now on, which is Tom.
That sounds good.
And we're going to start with you. Give me your picks. How am I going to make money in 2022? ETF picks, go.
All right, I'm going to come in hot with this first one. It's probably the biggest story of last year, Cathie Wood, right, and ARK Fund. But I'm going the opposite side with the short ARK Fund. So it's SARK, which is the Total Capital Short Innovation ETF. I get it. Launching inverse ETF is hard. Markets tend to go up over time. I like this one. It's gotten a lot of attention very, very quickly. Cathie has a lot of haters out there. If you look at performance, it just launched in I think like November. It's up already 22%. Historically, that's one of the best performing ETFs out of the gate. It's already got some volume. I'm calling this one like a mini SQQQ. I think there's going to be a good enough ecosystem around it that I think this product can be around for a while.
Okay, so for that to succeed, Cathie has to fail, right?
At the highest level, yes. But if you look at something like SQQQ, right? So over time, yeah, markets go up. But I was actually pretty interested to see that even with the Qs going up so much, the assets in SQQ have been going up. So yeah, if Cathie's fund does well, this over time is going to be going down. But the way her fund's actually been forming pretty recently, this has been doing really good. Like I said, the fund's up 22% since it launched. And not even the performance. I think if it can build a pretty strong trading ecosystem, I think this is what's going to keep this product alive, is even just as much as the performance.
And just remember, SQQQ is obviously short the Qs. And I think a lot of people look at SPY as sort of like the market. The Qs is sort of like innovative tech. And then Kathy as like non-profitable tech, like stuff that hopefully will pay off way down the road. And now she's actually creating her own little Q-ish world. So I think this is actually a compliment or good for her. It'll, because when this thing gets money, it's got to buy ARKK. So it's all kind of integrated into the Kathy ecosystem. So I think the liquidity is good, but I agree, Tom. This is one that will probably have nice little spurts when ARK is sold off.
Okay, next. Okay, this one sounds boring, but I think it's actually indicative of a much bigger thing. BKLC, which is the Bank of New York Mellon U.S. Large Cap Core ETF, which is just basically like a generic type of the S&P or one of those like generic large cap broad ETFs. Why this one is different? It's free, has a zero expense ratio, right? So who's not going to want a free ETF? I actually am taking this pick as a product that I think is not going to raise that much money, even though it's free. Because when you look at it, what it's up against, right? It's time to disrupt Vanguard. I get it. Being cheap is a good lane. You want to be in it. It's traditionally work, but Vanguard already owns that space. And if you look at what VOO can even do with tracking and total cost of ownership, you're already getting VOO for free. So I think prying that money out of VOO is going to be really, really hard for this product. So I actually think that this is a case that even if it's free, it's not going to raise any money.
Well, I will say it has 450 million. That's probably a lot of BYOA, which is money coming in through their clients. But you know, this is the idea. Bank of New York is a big custodian. They have a lot of, they serve a lot of advisors. They can say, hey, look, buy the Acme brand instead of Vanguard. It's 3 basis points cheaper. And obviously, maybe a couple people are doing that.
Next.
All right. So Eric said I can pick one European one. And it doesn't have USITS in the name, so it's fine. But I love this ticker. It's CO2. And this is the Spark Change Physical Carbon ETC. And so carbon's been a really hot item. So what this does is it buys carbon allowances. So I don't know if people know how those work. It's essentially like a permit that companies can use to pollute, right? So as companies want to buy these up, this ETF actually has two benefits. One, it's just going to track the price of these carbon credits, right? As they go up and in the demand, they're going to track that price. But what's so different about this product compared to any other ETF out there that's tracking carbon credits, it actually owns the credits. So this is almost like a hoarder in a way, in that it's buying the credit ETFs, taking it off the market so companies can't use them. It's actually taking the supply out of the market. So it's basically saying that even if companies wanted to buy these credits to pollute, they can't because we're buying up all the supply. And then that also will probably could potentially end up moving the price a little bit higher as well, just because you're limiting
supply. That's incredible. So they're actually like a market maker because they're able to take onto their books an asset that companies are trying to get.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at some of the other carbon ones that have done well, they're all just tracking futures. So it parallels what's happening with Bitcoin futures versus physical. They're actually owning the credit. So even if you wanted to buy them, they're hoarding them. So I think it's a really interesting strategy. It's the first of its kind. And I like the physically backed aspect compared to some of the other futures.
Have they sold out there anything yet?
Yeah, they've actually done quite a bit. They're up over 100 million in only a couple months, and that's in Europe. So that's actually really impressive in the context of that market. It's really, really good. It's a very, very strong start.
That makes up for your previous pick, which was a little boring. Let's see what you got for number four.
All right, this one's boring too, but it's SPIB, which is a Spider Portfolio Intermediate Term Corporate Bond ETF. They cut their fee on this. So they Vanguarded, and then Vanguard ended up cutting the fee back. But what I think this is so important is if you look at the fixed income ETF market, it's all BlackRock and Vanguard. They're like 80% of the assets. State Street really missed an opportunity here. And they were one of the original, you know, ones that could launch fixed income ETFs. I think they're going to put a lot of effort into their fixed income lineup with fee reductions, maybe launching more products. I just think this is a way that they're, and if you look at what's happening with the rest of their business, you know, they're losing share to iShares and Vanguard. So I actually think they're going to really try to make it up on the fixed income side. So I'd be looking for some really, really aggressive moves for State Street in their fixed income space. And I'm just picking this ETF as a proxy just because they were so aggressive with some of the recent fee cuts.
All right, I'm still bored. Give me some fireworks to end on.
Okay, I think this is a pretty nice ticker. It's MVPS, which is the Amplify Thematic All-Star ETF. Now, how we were talking about Kathy before, just thematic ETFs in general have gotten so, so large. It's like one of the biggest categories now sector wise, but the space has gotten so big that when you say, hey, okay, I want to buy an autonomous vehicle ETF or a cybersecurity ETF, there's so much out there that actually the performance dispersion is pretty wide. You can have a very different experience than someone else who bought a different product. So what this tries to do is cut through the middle of that, saying, yeah, there's all these different thematic products, but where's that one point where they all meet? Where are the highest conviction thematic picks of all these ETFs? And the category is so big that this actually matters. So I think over time, not only is this going to, so it's basically sliced down the middle. I actually think it's going to do better than the average because it's not just, you know, it's trying to be sort of a diversified thematic pick, but the fact that it's choosing the highest conviction names, I think it's actually going to do a little bit better than average. So I think this just, I like this product because it cuts through all that thematic performance dispersion, which is, and it's only 49 basis points. It's pretty concentrated. I think those are, it's a good, you know, good price points.
I'm going to be honest and say that the ticker was better than your explanation, but you know, that's just the brutal reality of it. And you know, don't read into it too much. You know,
I would add, like, to throw in some of the stats that are, that Ethan or Tom mentioned, they have 100.
James is going to bail you out. James is going to
I love this pick from Tom. The sector, if you consider thematic ETFs a sector, like Tom mentioned, it's the second largest sector of ETFs. There's 161 billion assets in these types of ETFs. So, and we have a ton of different categories in the dashboard, and it's continually growing. It's one of the fastest growing areas of the market. So I'm definitely going to be watching MVPS as well.
I believe this one also has the most overlap with ARK, right? Didn't, what's his name, Mike Atkins, show that? So for tax loss harvesting, yeah, because I'm looking Tesla, NVIDIA, Block. These are Kathy stocks. Shopify.
I really like products that try to cut through the noise. Where do we all agree? Where do all these products agree? And I think there's some benefit there in just finding these really high conviction picks.
This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. What do all the greatest innovations have in common? Agents. People who participate in progress by supporting cutting-edge ideas. Invesco QQQ is a fund that allows you access to innovators of the NASDAQ 100 all in one fund. So you don't have to be an inventor to help create what's next to come. Anyone can become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes. 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Rebecca, how's Hong Kong?
Hong Kong is doing well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. Okay, I want to hear your picks. Which one are you most excited about? Let's start with that one.
The one I'm probably most excited about is electric vehicle. And the reason why I chose electric vehicle is that there's been a lot of growth in this sector, especially in China. So within the electrical vehicle in China, we've seen some of the ETFs return more than 50%. And one of the main reasons for China's growth is that they're starting from a much lower base. So Chinese electric vehicles posted greater returns than they did in the US. So for instance, if we look at some stats like their new energy vehicle, it contributed to 21% of the return. Looking at 1 year earlier, the return was only 8%. And so the Chinese market has a lot more growth potential. And with the chip shortage easing and everyone looking for driverless cars, autonomous technology, and robotics, as well as ESG favored themes, I believe that electric vehicles will do really well. And the one that I picked is Global X Autonomous Electric Vehicle Drive US, which captures this segment at only 65 basis points.
So the ticker is DRIVE. Yeah. Wow, that's an amazing ticker. Eric, how come we've never talked about that one before?
We might have brought it up. I mean, you know, there's a couple electric vehicle ETFs out there. I know I did it once on our ETF battles with Ron DeLegge, and I get asked a lot about electric vehicle ETFs. It's one of the most popular. That and Bitcoin are probably the two most questions I get from like regular people. I think people have seen non-Tesla car companies get into electric vehicles, and they're like, you know, this is, it's going to take over. They can see Tesla little electric pumps showing up at the Wawa or the 7-Eleven or whatever, and they're like, this is really happening. So I agree. I think this is a big theme. I think some of these stocks, though, you probably find in other funds. But for the most part, I think this is exactly why theme ETFs were invented. Electric vehicles is definitely has a bright future.
Okay, number two.
Number two is Metaverse. Everyone's heard of Metaverse. But one of the things that's interesting is that the Metaverse ETFs actually started a lot longer before Facebook rebranded to Meta. And so I may have predicted that the Metaverse ETF universe may reach $80 billion by 2024, which might be a little bit aggressive, but we've had a lot of progress since then. And so even in Asia, in Korea, we had four Metaverse ETFs launch on the exact same day. And two of the ETFs, Samsung and Mirae, managed to reach more than $100 million in only 6 days, which is very quick for reaching $100 million. And so the Metaverse ETF has surpassed more than $2.3 billion in December. And so I think that there's a lot of growth opportunity. And I know a lot of other regions, for instance, in Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore, they're looking to launch Metaverse ETFs as well this year. So the U.S. is leading the race at more than $1.4 billion in assets under management. Roundhill Ball's Metaverse ETF, Meta U.S., leads the pack in terms of having the largest assets under management, but there are other ETFs that are going to join, and I see that a lot more ETF issuers jumping in on the bandwagon for Metaverse products.
Okay, and of course, if you want to learn more about this Metaverse space, we did a great episode with Rebecca and Matt Ball, who is the brain behind the Meta ETF. So you can check that out. That was just a couple months ago.
Yeah, I mean, if one thing on Meta in the U.S. here, that ETF, there was 450-ish launches last year of natural organic flows. That was the third most successful of all 450. That's a big feat. And honestly, they got a huge break when Facebook changed their name to Meta. That's when that was like a catalyst moment, because I think they might have had like 60 million. Now they have almost a billion. Sometimes it's good to be lucky, but they, you know what? They were ahead of the curve, and that's important. You got to be out. You got to be in it to win it, Joel.
We'll see if it wins it, but definitely have a lot of investor enthusiasm. Okay, what's next, Rebecca?
The next one is Cathie Wood's flagship ARK Innovation, ARKKUS. Can't talk about ETFs without talking about this one. The number one performing fund in 2020, but then it didn't do so well in 2021. And so I believe there's a lot of growth potential for it in 2022. Ultimately, this fund tracks five areas within the technology sector, which includes DNA sequencing, robotics, energy storage, artificial intelligence, and blockchain technology. I believe that as the world becomes more dependent on technology, there's a lot of growth opportunity for this.
So look, ARK has come down to earth a bit, you know, down 40% since February. It had to happen. It was up too much. I think everybody saw it was like, how on earth could a fund return this much in a year? And I think over 5 years, though, it's still an annualized return of like 35%. I mean, that's ridiculous. But a lot of people came in at the high. So some people are underwater. It's an ongoing controversy. But the fact is, not a lot of people left the fund. And I think the reason for that is, again, they have cheap beta. They've got all the serious investor, fundamentally sound stocks covered in their cheap beta part of their portfolio. So they already own all that stuff. Because that's what people ding Cathie on. They're like, oh, you own all these non-profitable crazy stocks. But most people are like, yeah, that's a feature, not a bug. Because I already own the fundamental stuff. I want Cathie for that potential huge payoff. The dreamers kind of stocks. And, you know, that asymmetric return potentially. And I think they buy into her five-year a plan. I mean, she's basically said this is going to take a little while. And I think, you know, her personality is also a big part of it. So it's really interesting that people haven't left. And I think Cathie Wood and ARK will be around for a long time. If you cannot see outflows after a 40% drawdown, that is a really, really good sign.
Biggie money. Okay, Rebecca, last pick, your last pick?
My last pick is going to have to be China focused since I am based in Hong Kong. China has had lots of difficulties in 2021, but I believe that there are pockets of growth in China in 2022. Despite Beijing's regulatory crackdown, strained U.S. relations, there are opportunities of growth, and some of these include clean energy, electric vehicles, tech, healthcare, and China A shares. I'd say specifically where there's maybe the most opportunity would be within China tech. And the reason for this is because it's been massively hit in 2021, hit more than 50% due to Beijing's regulatory crackdown. And the one I picked is CraneShares CSI China Internet, KWeb. What's most interesting about KWeb is that despite the drop of more than 50% in 2021, they managed to get $4 billion worth of inflows. And so more than 80% of the assets under management came in 2021 as the fund was dropping. And so there's a lot, ultimately a lot of people looking to invest into China technology, and this is a great ETF for that.
And the thesis here being that it won't get worse?
We believe that China's technology sector has already been hit a lot and that there will be a rebound in 2022. At what time? It's to be determined. Ultimately, it is very dependent on the government, but there is still a lot of growth opportunity within the China sector. And so I think that it will rebound in 2022.
Yeah, and actually, Rebecca, I think the flows into KWeb are actually even a little more. By the end of the year, I think they were like $7.5 billion. The spread between negative 50% and plus $7 billion, that's an insane spread between performance and flows. As Athanasios put it, it's in the buy the dip hall of fame for sure. At some point, these people will be rewarded, but also there's not many dips to buy anymore. I mean, everything's up all the time. It's like a utopia out there. And this was a huge dip for people to buy into. I can't believe KWeb is the biggest China ETF in the US. It's passed MCHI and FXI and all these like broader based ones that you'd think would be way bigger. It's like having an awful 45% drawdown was like the best thing that ever happened to it.
I think within the China sector also, though, there are so many Chinese ETFs that people often don't know which one to invest into. And so CraneShares has done a really good job at providing a niche exposure to the Chinese markets. And if you look at CraneShares product offering, they have everything from electric vehicles to clean energy to healthcare, as well as China A shares, which are really the large segments. And so there's no other ETF issuer in the US that covers the China market as well as CraneShares.
And to this point about being the hot sauce on top of cheap beta, if a lot of people own an emerging markets ETF like IMG, you have China covered to a large extent, but KWeb can actually be put on top of that, because there isn't a ton of overlap between IEMG or EEM and KWeb. So I think KWeb has been a little bit of an arc as well in the way it's used in a portfolio. So I agree. CraneShares is really a company doing a lot. And Athanasios just talked about the carbon ETF earlier. They have a carbon credit ETF coming out, I believe, in a couple months as well.
This podcast is brought to you by Invesco QQQ. What do all the greatest innovations have in common? Agents, people who participate in progress by supporting cutting-edge ideas. Invesco QQQ is a fund that allows you access to innovators of the NASDAQ 100 all in one fund. So you don't have to be an inventor to help create what's next to come. Anyone can become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. There are risks when investing in ETFs, including possible loss of money. ETF risks are similar to those of stocks. Investments in the tech sector are subject to greater risk and more volatility than more diversified investments. The NASDAQ 100 Index comprises the 100 largest non-financial companies on the NASDAQ. You can't invest directly into an index. Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit Invesco.com for a prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully before investing. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight.
athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Okay, James, those are hard acts to follow. No pressure. What do you got in the third quarter for us?
Yeah, so the first one I'm going to start with is Bitto, which made biggest headlines in Q4, possibly in 2021. It was the first Bitcoin futures ETF launch in the U.S. First Bitcoin ETF, but unfortunately it was futures. I'm watching this obviously because everyone's talking about Bitcoin and have been for a while, but also because, as I mentioned, it tracks futures and there's issues with futures ETFs involving roll costs. So essentially when you buy futures, you have to sell the current contract and buy the next one. And there's costs in doing that. And we want to watch and see how much those roll costs add up. Currently, they're about 2.7%, and it's only been existing for 2.5 months. So at that rate, we're going to be over 12% annual roll costs to have exposure to this thing. But again, this thing does have tight spreads, no commissions to trade it, things like that. So we're just going to be watching this ecosystem. I think there's two other ETFs out there right now. There might be more that hold Bitcoin futures. And I think there could be some competition amongst like how well do they track spot Bitcoin and them marketing against each other.
Hey, by the way, real quick, I'm looking at the volume on Bitto and it's never traded under $100 million in a day since birth. That there's no way that's been... There's a precedent for that.
Yeah, I can't think of anything. It's a good trading vehicle. It's definitely a good trading vehicle. There's definitely issues for it as a long-term holding vehicle because of those roll costs that can add up.
Okay. In non-Bitcoin news, what do you got for us?
Okay, so the next one is going to be Vote. Vote is the Engine Number One Transform 500 ETF. This is just, it basically holds the 500 largest US stocks. It charges 5 basis points and it's an ESG ETF, but it doesn't do anything in its investments to be ESG. It's ESG through its proxy voting and it's basically an activist investing with money behind it. So they had a campaign where they went against Exxon. That's how Engine Number One got its big name. They're doing stuff with GM and electric vehicles. So this is just a whole different way to spin ESG investing that obviously I'm going to be watching to see how it works out. It's almost at 300 million. It's about 6-7 months old. And it's been taking in money pretty consistently. 2 million here, 3 million there. But ever since its launch, pretty much every single week, it's taken in some money. So it's going to be interesting to see how this does, especially compared to the more traditional asset managers that are doing the massive exclusionary ESG ETF strategies.
Also, I like Vote as well, namely because with ESG ETFs, you have a chance of underperforming. Here, you don't. It tracks the S&P and its Vanguardian price point. So I like it. We actually interviewed the Vote people, 6 months ago, Joel? And they gave us a lot of information about their process. It was a good episode. I would go check it out if you're interested to learn more.
Yep, that was with Charlie Penner, who led the campaign against Exxon. Okay, James, what else you got?
So the next one, I'm very interested to watch how rate hedge ETFs go. There's a lot of talk about inflation. The Fed's going to raise rates. There's always this talk since basically 2011, 2013. People want to hedge rising rates. These things have been around since then, and they just haven't picked up that much in the way of assets. But that really changed in 2021. These things took in over $2 billion in assets. So one example that is the IGBH, the iShares Interest Rate Hedge Long-Term Corporate Bond ETF. There's also LQDH. There's a lot of corporate bond and bond ETFs that just have a hedge on them, which basically means they're shorting treasuries. So I'm going to be watching to see if these continue to gain assets and if they are outperforming as rates rise, we could see people piling on in a performance chasing manner.
Okay, time out on these interest rate hedged ETFs are really interesting. obviously they need the stars to align, but I wonder if the currency hedged ETF phenomenon of what is it like?
Which was big.
It was big. Everybody rushed in. They took $60 billion in, but then it's sort of stopped working and everybody pulled out. It started working again and no one bought back in. They didn't get a second bite at the apple. I wonder if the rate hedged ETFs are tainted because of the currency hedged ETF people who may have got burnt rushing in and then realizing it doesn't outperform forever. Tom, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. A lot of the history is an indication, whether it's the currency hedge or even the ARK stuff, people come in late into these products. So I think when people are going to allocate to currency to rate hedge, it'll be too late.
Yeah, that's,
I know that's dismal. People suck at timing. I guess that's what I essentially said.
I also think that with rate hedging, the outperformance isn't as shiny-ish. And so it's not going to attract as many eyeballs as it did on the international equity side. But we'll see.
Okay, James, let's hear it.
Okay.
Bring it home.
Yeah, so so the next one I talk about is FRDM, which is the Freedom 100 Emerging Markets ETF. I kind of view this in a similar light as I view VOTE. It's another play on ESG, except because when you talk about this, so emerging market, China's make up 30-40% of the emerging market index by market cap. So a lot of people talk about using ESG, investing in ESG, and then they just buy a broad emerging markets ETF, and China is arguably doing a lot of things that would go against ESG principles, which actually, it's not really arguable that they are doing a lot of things that go against ESG principle. And what this ETF does is it kind of ranks countries and they scores them by like how they protect life, liberty, and property rights. So human rights, economic freedoms, things like that. So China gets booted out of this ETF. There's a few other countries they get booted out. It's just a different play in emerging markets exposure. It's kind of like an ESG exposure to emerging markets. So I'm going to be very interested to see how this does going forward. It's crossed over 100 million just recently. So that's another thing we're watching. Again, a tilt on ESG.
Again, we had Perth Toll on, who started FRDM, who grew up in China. We had her on before she was cool, too, or before she got, you know, popular. This is one of her early episodes. I will say, I got to say, it's a little bit of a shame that FRDM is at $100 million, which is good. That's healthy for indie. But that BlackRock X China is like well over a billion, because a lot of people are liking this trade, but they're doing it through the EMX China. I think Free FRDM actually goes a little further and says it's not just China. There's some other countries that are equally as bad in terms of their freedom score. But she had the idea, and it's kind of, I don't know, a little bit of shame that there wasn't more traction there, since it seemed to be her idea originally. But that's sort of what distribution can do, I think.
Yeah, it's EMXC, and it's over $2 billion now. But one big thing to say is what you mentioned. FRDM does more than just screen out China. It screens out a couple other countries. The other thing is EMXC is half the price. So FRDM is about 49 bips and EMXC is 25 bips. So that's another contributing factor.
Hold on. I have to see the performance of the three. Yeah. So it looks like EMXC is up 8%. FRDM is up 4.6% and EEM's down 4% for the year. So maybe EMXC has a little extra performance, but I think it's more BlackRock and the brand name and distribution.
Okay, final pick, James, and I think I know what it is. It's from last year, right?
Yeah.
Repeat.
Yeah,
he loves this. He can't stop thinking about it. This is like his significant other.
I honestly get more questions on this product than any other product. You can put 10 products together, and I get more questions on this one product than all those 10 together.
Can't stop.
And it's
can't stop talking about your ex-girlfriend.
It's GBTC, the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. Technically, it's not an ETF, but it's the biggest. It's a multi $30 billion product. It's been over $40 billion. It's a behemoth. It trades OTC, but it has huge issues. It's trading at a 20% discount right now. There's some concerns around it, but what Grayscale wants to do is convert this to an ETF. Now, with the SEC approving the 1940 Act Bitcoin Futures ETF, like BIDO, which I already talked about, has opened some avenues for Grayscale to kind of like possibly file a lawsuit against the SEC for not treating like situations alike. So we're going to see some SEC responses to other Bitcoin applications over the next few months, specifically some big ones in April. And then the GBTC decision is due July 6th. So over those next few months, I'm going to be watching very closely to see what kind of language the SEC uses and how they handled the GBTC decision. We do expect them to deny it, but if they do deny it, I would honestly, I expect Grayscale to possibly file a lawsuit citing an APA violation.
Yeah, look, the lure here for GBTC is that it's 22% premium. So if and when it gets, SEC says you can convert, that's 22% instant profit. I mean, you should be made whole pretty quickly. And that's what people, but it's just a question of how long do you have to wait? Guys, I don't think Gensler's going to approve a spot ETF while he's in office. That's my new thing. I'm pretty.
Well, a lawsuit could change those matters, though.
Yeah, but
right?
It also like could agitate because Grayscale has a couple of these products, which arguably the SEC could like look at because they aren't, you know, they aren't really that functionally good. I mean, they traded wide premiums and discounts. So do you want, I mean, look, I'm all for it. I think the SEC should approve this stuff. If a lawsuit does it, great. If I was an issuer, I don't know if I'd want to agitate them like that. I don't know. It's fascinating.
So the one other thing I would say is it's more than just 22. So it's at a 22% discount. Theoretically, if it par is 100 and it's trading at 78, to go from 78 to 100 is almost a 30% increase, not a 22% increase. So it actually is more than the discount when it goes back to whatever NAV would be, if it does get approved. But again, I don't think it's happening in 2022, but I'm going to be watching very closely for what the SEC says over the next 6 months.
All right. Thanks, James. That's 14. To get to 22, we need 8 more. So, Eric, I guess you're on the hook for 8. Let's go.
Yeah, we just hired 2 new people, but they're not up and writing yet. So next year, they're going to handle this. So I took double load because, you know, that's what you got to do sometimes, you know.
All right, big man. Let's hear it, and then we'll decide how great these ideas are.
Okay, you want the shiny ones first or the boring ones first?
I mean, the boring ones first. Okay. It's like Tom did set the table there by giving us some. I'm joking, Tom. It's okay. All right, go ahead, Eric.
Quickly, TLT, long dated treasuries, probably the most boring thing out there. But when the market sells off, the stock market, TLT is one of the best all-natural organic hedges out there. Almost every time the markets, we look back, it almost offsets all your stock losses. It's the hedge that Bitcoin and gold can only dream of being. In fact, gold is like, does what it wants. It's usually like flat. Bitcoin goes down worse than the market. So I really, when I went back and ran this data, I would look at Bitcoin or crypto as a high beta stock, not a hedge, and maybe not even a store of value, although James will probably get triggered by that. But I also think, and not that I don't like Bitcoin, I just think it behaves like a high beta stock. And then TLT, I think, in next year, the market has gone up 72% in the last 3 years. That is triple what you're supposed to get historically. So we're like living way above our means in the S&P. So I would perceive a rougher year, and I think TLT will show again it's a good hedge. And VTI, another boring one, that's the Vanguard Total Market. I also picked this one last year. I think this is the perfect ETF. It's FOMO proof. It owns small caps, mid caps, value, growth. Whatever is doing well, you own it, even meme stocks. And I do think over time, VTI will be the biggest ETF on the planet, probably within the next 5 years. It was second in flows this year. And because of the securities lending, it actually tracked perfectly, which means it's essentially free exposure to the whole U.S. enchilada. It's a beautiful thing, a modern miracle of science in a way.
Stick with TLT here because that it had a down year in 21. Bonds did not do well, right? So you're saying that despite going down and, you know, apprehensions about what the stock market might do in 2022, this will be the safe haven that everybody wants.
So like in 2008, the market was down 35%. TLT was up 34%. And then in 2018, and then again, just last Thanksgiving, or, you know, like a month ago, the market fell, I think, 4%. TLT was up 4%. It doesn't always perfectly go up the same the market goes down, but it's just proven to be the best offsetter. And it's not like a derivative where, like a put option or the VIX, where you're constantly, your insurance is corroding. This is literally just a bunch of bonds. It's a long-only thing. And I like the fact there's nothing weird going on. You just own a basket of bonds. So that's why I call it all natural. So
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, as you mentioned, gold is more of a diversifier. It does its own thing. It never does what people expect it to. Bitcoin is more of a risk asset at this point. I wouldn't argue that it's a hedge against pretty much anything, maybe against currency debasement, but that's about it. TLT really does act as an equity market hedge in times of stress.
It's boring but effective. Okay, so another one is USMV. This is the popular... Actually, Tom chose this one last year. I'm choosing it this year. Minimum volatility is such a great, easy thing to sell for an advisor to their older investors. It's like, hey, it's like Diet Coke. You get most of the market, a little less volatility. It's a smoother ride, right? Less calories. It had a rough 2 years, especially since March 2020 when the Fed stepped in and saw a lot of outflows. Again, back to that second bite of the apple. Will low vol and min vol get a second bite at the apple? Let's say it had a good December. If it keeps it going, will people come back in? And this is a great case study for that premise of how many bites of the apple do you get? More and more, I'm thinking you get one. You have your shiny object moment, people come in, and then if you really let them down too much and they leave, they tend not to come back even when you start doing well. And that's, we'll see, maybe this will overcome that. And then my last one is AVDV, which is the Avantis International Value ETF. Avantis is an up-and-coming issuer. They do like smart beta and it's cheap. So they're in the dirt cheap lane and they give you a little extra, you know, smart beta in there. They throw it in there. So it's cheap smart beta. International small cap value is probably the most bargain basement, bargain bin thing you can find on the earth, right? The PE of this thing, I think, is 10. Okay, like if anything were to lead the charge of a regime change of value, I would look for this. This isn't just small cap value. It's international small cap value. So it's sort of the canary in the coal mine. But if it pops, this thing should pop a lot. So I'm watching it to see if we will get some people looking at the beat up stuff since the S&P had such a good run. Maybe value's time is finally arrived.
Okay, so TLT, USVM, VTI, AVDV, those are your boring picks. Let's get to the spicy stuff.
Sure. So CTRU. Which is the it's see-through. It's the arc transparency. So one of my big problems with ESG is that it's trying to replace something like VTI. And who in the hell wants to give up their cheap beta and put in something that could underperform that costs more? That's just a tough sell. But ARC sells hot sauce. And now what they're doing is they're making ESG hot sauce. It's largely the G, but it's looking at the most transparent companies and it's picking 100 and equal weighting them. Equal weighting is like a legal performance-enhancing drug itself. So you're basically jacking up the vol on purpose. So this could be used as a way to complement VTI. I'm very bullish on things complementing, not competing with Vanguard, and this would be an ESG way to do it. It will need the performance, but I'm watching it.
Okay, that's pretty good hot sauce.
Another one is COPX, which is the Global X Copper Miners. This is a fascinating story. This thing lived in oblivion for like 11 years. It had like $100 million. Like no one gave a crap about this thing. All of a sudden, inflation hit worries hit, and copper is something you buy if you're worried about inflation. It's a good hedge. And this thing now has well over $1 billion. It's amazing it hung on. Normally an ETF throws in the towel after 4 or 5 years, let alone 10. So I like the fact that it's on its way up. The other thing is, not only is copper an inflation hedge, but it's like a risk-on inflation hedge. And the copper is also going to be used in a lot of renewables and the sort of move to get to net zero. Copper is a big... So there's a couple things kind of all coming together for this play, I think. And luckily, Global X did not liquidate it. And so it's going to be interesting. It's $1.7 billion. And it was like $200 million like 16 months ago. So anyway...
James. How do you feel about that?
So the other thing that copy miners are good for is basically economic recovery or activity. So this thing was a reopening trade as well. So it's hit a whole bunch of things that reopening, inflation, all the things Eric mentioned. So it's been like in the crosshairs of a bunch of news stories over the last few months or years even at this point.
Joel, its stars have aligned. And that's these things with these niche products. They may have to wait 10 years for that right moment, and this thing it seems to have come because people do feel like things are okay. The Fed's got their back. They're feeling like risk is on, but they are definitely worried about inflation. So that's a really, that is the stars aligning for something like a copper miners ETF. Anyway, so all we'll right. see. Who knows? Pretty
good. Strong.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, let's get
since,
spicy.
Since you're naturally biased against me, the fact that you said strong, I'm going to actually times that by two and be like, you must be really bowled over. Okay. Next is Bits. So Bits is like, you know, Bitto. James said the problem is the roll cost. Bits basically is half Bitcoin miners and like blockchain stocks and half Bitcoin futures. But it's also the futures in the middle of the curve and there's less roll cost. So I did the calculation here and you're only going to look at 2 to 3% roll cost a year probably. And you get more kick than you if you buy a blockchain Bitcoin mining theme ETF. So it's kind of trying to get the best of both worlds, because I don't think advisors are going to be comfortable with a 15% annual roll cost. I just think it's too much and there's a big variable. It could be more. This, I think they're like, well, look, I know the roll cost won't be that much. It's middle of the curve. It's only half the fund. I think this is a safer bet for advisors while Gensler does nothing in order in, you know, why the spot ETF just sits on ice. We'll see. I don't know, but I do see this as being something that could appeal long term. And I like the innovation from Global X on that one.
Yeah, I would chime in and just say that the blockchain and crypto thematic ETF world is now over $2 billion, despite having a decent sized drawdown over the last month, just because Bitcoin has also fallen. But there's 14 ETFs already in there, 15 actually, the ones launching very soon. So it's a very competitive market to be in, but I agree with Eric. It's kind of hitting all these different areas that advisors might like, especially for advisors who don't like the roll costs of Bitto and do want exposure to Bitcoin, and there's no spot Bitcoin ETF. GBTC trades at a discount. This kind of fits a lot of different avenues that advisors want exposure to this stuff. It's in a sweet spot.
Interesting.
That okay. said, it's almost 2 months old at only 8 million. So I've seen this before. Sometimes an ETF can appeal to the critics like me, and yet nobody cares. Like the X-Trackers All China ETF. All the critics were like, oh, this is the greatest, and yet nobody bought it. It's like one of those movies that like Tree of Life with Sean Penn, where like it's like a Rotten Tomatoes like 97% and audience is like 20.
Never saw it.
Okay.
Didn't see it.
It's very, I liked it, but I'm weird, but it's not like a movie that like is going to sweep the country. Anyway.
All right. Your final pick.
Oh, my final one is FOVL, but I'm going to actually put a couple FOVL deep and QVAL. These are all the deep value. These things buy the most beat up US value stocks, and they're at the top of our value factor intensity score. So if and when value comes back, again, these things should lead the way. And it was interesting. We made this intensity score, and in Q1, it perfectly matched the returns. And I think these days when people have a portfolio, if they have a VTI or a VU or an IVV in the center, like cheap beta, there would be no reason to buy a watered-down value ETF. It would make no sense because you own a lot of those stocks in your S&P or your total market. But what would make sense is a deep value, again, to complement the Vanguard. So in other words, one of these deep value EPs could be the future ARK. It could, believe it or not, a deep value could be a shiny object for 3 or 4 years. Remember, small cap value led the way in the 2000s and the S&P was flat. So this is the second year in a row I've been watching deep value, and I have two on my list, obviously. But at some point, I think these things are going to be hit the gold mine.
Tom, what do you think?
No, I really like it. And I agree with Eric's point. And if you're seeing just how the value rotations have been lately, they've been really aggressive coming back. So I think it makes sense to go really, really concentrated. It's only got something like 40 holdings. So I'm a fan of the more concentrated strategies. So I think this one could do well if value comes back very aggressively.
I'm going to be watching it too. I like it. International value, you have to be watching it at this point. I mean, it feels my entire professional career value has been garbage. So,
yeah, you don't even know what it's like.
Yeah, I don't. I really don't. Yeah. Only from my research.
It doesn't even seem like it can happen.
Yeah.
I've heard tell.
Long ago, small cap value wasn't the worst trade of.
In a land far away. Yeah.
While it seems impossible, let me drop this number. So in the 2000s, IJS, which is small cap value, was up 100% in the decade. The S&P was down 8%. for James, that has to seem like some kind of a fairy tale, like magic. Like, how could that possibly have happened? But it did. And it will happen again at some point. Anyway, so just to tell you, dreams do come true for value once in a while.
James, Tom, Rebecca, thanks so much for joining us on Trillions. Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you. Or on Twitter, I'm at Joel Webershow. He's at Eric Balchunas. This episode of Trillions was produced by Magnus Hendrickson. Francesca Levy is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. Bye.
You don't have to be a rocket scientist to help realize a mission to Mars. Become an agent of innovation with Invesco QQQ. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.